Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
I'm Kobayashi. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. You tuned into the Heritage Radio Network. The show is Flash Talks Cash. We're about money, making it, spending it, saving it, what to do with it when you get it. I'm your host, Joanne Flash Fleming, and my son, Andrew, my happy son, Newman, was with us.
Yes, I am here.
Yes, and we got Joey G in the booth, manning all the buttons out there. Hey, Joe.
Also happy.
Oh, good. Okay.
Are you happy, Joanne?
I'm happy.
That's too. Good.
I'm hot, but I'm happy.
It's nice in here. What are you talking about?
It's beautiful in here. It's brutal outside. All right, so we broadcast live every Thursday from 4:30 to 5, and we'd love to hear from you during the show, so you can email us, and Joe will take your emails at info@heritageradionetwork.com. Or you can call us, and we'll be happy to talk with you. And that number is
718-497-2128.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
497-2128. Good job.
How's your week been, Joanne?
So far, so good. I'm on vacation. Well, quasi-vacation. So now...
damn it.
Now, so if you can't tune in while we're broadcasting live, all shows are archived on the website, or you can download a free podcast through iTunes and listen to Flash Talks Cash all the time, anytime.
24/7.
24/7.
360.
365.
Take 5 days off.
Don't take 5 days off.
Someone's
so anyway, so here we are today. Our show is, what's the name of our show today? Oh, you need money? Don't call the banks.
Loan sharks. Loan sharking.
No, not loan sharking.
No?
No. You know, I talked about this a few episodes ago, well, many episodes ago, about micro-lending. Remember micro-lending, Andrew?
No, I don't. What is micro-lending?
Micro-lending. And we're also going to talk about peer-to-peer lending.
What's
micro-lending,
that?
Micro-lending started years ago.
With loan sharks?
No, not loan. I'm not talking about loan sharks. Andrew, we're a legal entity here. We don't tout criminal behavior, okay?
So
we're going to stick with the legal stuff. Okay, a long time ago, 10, 20 years ago, Muhammad Yunus from India created micro-lending. What he did was he got very small loans to women who use these small loans and parlayed those small loans into viable businesses. You know, we're talking about women who live on, you know, $20 a month or something. So he would get them like $2 loans so they could buy fabric or something, and they could sew something, and they can parlay that into a profit, and then they would take their profits and reinvest it into their business. So he was famous for that. It happened, I think, in the 90s. So now, you know, it's gone all around the world, and it's mostly charitable work, a variety of different entities, colleges all over the United States, and non-government organizations provide micro-lending to very poor people. And usually in the third world, they go in South America, Central America, Africa, Asia, all over the world. But unfortunately, they got into trouble a few years ago. And
sounds like loan sharking to me.
It's not loan sharking. The women pay it back.
How much? What's the interest?
Many of them are interest-free loans.
How would you give an interest-free loan?
Because it's charitable work.
It's charitable work.
It's sending money over to see. Because when you raise the level of poverty in the
the
whole level into higher levels, get out of poverty.
Gotcha.
So let me tell you a story that I read in the Times today, which got me thinking about this. And this is from Malawi, and there's a couple.
Who?
Malawi.
What's that?
It's a country in Africa.
Malawi.
Malawi.
Is that a new one?
No.
I never heard of that one.
No, the country's Malawi. Well, you better do a little geography after the show. And so we got Alfred and his wife, Beattie Rose. And they have 7 children, 2 of them dead already, but without ever seeing a doctor. So now they got 5 more. And they pulled their oldest son out of school in the 4th grade because they couldn't afford to pay the $5 tuition for the year, for the term. It was too expensive. And they only farmed part of their acreage, their 2.5 acres, because they didn't have any money for seeds. So this is, you know, pretty poor country, a pretty poor family. So Alfred, the husband, tells the reporter that even as his children are starving. This is an interesting one. You should listen to this.
I'm listening. I'm looking at Malawi.
Even as his children are starving, he spends an average $2 a week on local moonshine, 50 cents on cigarettes.
That's good for him. That sounds like a man after my own heart.
He added that he also spends $2 or more a week buying sex from local girls, even though AIDS is widespread.
So that's
great. The guy can't send his kid to $5 to school tuition for the term, but he's spending this kind of money. So
sounds
you know,
like a real American.
So the suffering is associated with poverty. It's sometimes caused not only by income, low incomes, but also by the self-destructive pathologies. Makes sense,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, okay. So men, a study in Kenya, men on average spent more of their salaries on alcohol than on food. It's a vicious cycle. Despair leads people to self-medicate in ways that compound the despair. Okay, so then there are some escape hatches. In 2005, Biddy Rose, the wife, joined the Village Savings Group, founded by CARE. You've heard of CARE, C-A-R-E. Yeah, it's a worldwide organization that helps poor people.
Okay,
CARE has been around for a long, long time. And so the Village Savings and Loans are one of the hot ideas in the developing world. They
So they're creating like a bank.
So they do. So what happens is, poor people don't have banks. They don't have access to any banks.
This is what this is.
So this is what the poor typically receive a pile of cash once or twice a year at the end of the harvest. They don't have banks, so the money just gets squandered. So now they get together and 19 members meet weekly, and each deposits the equivalent of about 10 cents a week. The money is then lent out to the members, and the CARE organization coaches them and helps them make smart business decisions.
Sounds brilliant.
So with a loan, now here we go. This is what Biddy Rose does. With a loan of $2, she starts making and selling a local version of donuts, which she initially sells for 2 cents each. People really like her donuts. So what happens? She starts selling lots of donuts, and she makes several dollars a day in profit.
Mm-hmm.
So inspired by her example, her husband begins growing vegetables and selling them, and he turned out to be a shrewd businessman, and now he's got all his 2.5 acres farmed, and he's got employees. He dropped the girlfriends, and he curbed his drinking.
That's fantastic.
So isn't that a nice story? So
great,
that's
self-help.
How microlending could work, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so now they move on and they live happily ever after. Isn't that great? So microlending has, and this story is again and again and again. That's why it's a very, very popular, happy thing. There's like I said, colleges all over this country want to do honorable things. They want to give back to the community. They send money. It could be as little as $20. And they loan money to very poor families. It's usually women. And the women take the money and they often parlay that into, you know, some sort of a life, a living. Some sort of a living. So
sounds fantastic.
So now in the 21st century, so this happened in the late 90s, sometime in the 90s. Now in the 21st century, along comes social media, social media. And now we've talked about crowdfunding, crowdsourcing. We talked about, you know, all those Kickstarter mm-hmm. programs and stuff. Well, they're also crowdfunding for people who want to borrow money and people who want to lend money. Mm-hmm. And social media is the whole bucket that keeps it together.
Okay.
So now let's talk about how this works in the 21st century in our economy, okay? It's called peer-to-peer. You heard of peer-to-peer investing, peer-to-peer lending, social lending.
A lot of things, yes.
Well, that's what it's all about, social lending. And so they put together people who have money that want to make money,
uh-huh.
and they find people, which there's no shortage of, people looking to borrow money, and they can't get it through traditional sources because the banks, after the financial crisis, stopped lending money to everybody.
Even
and
before
the
financial crisis.
The small businessmen completely shut out. So this really, I mean, it's been around since the mid 2000s. 2005, I think it first started 2006, but it really grew exponentially in 2009 and 2010 and 2011. And it's growing and it's going. So what is it about? Well, they put together, there's all kinds of options. They put together small business people with small investors. They could do a direct one-to-one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They eliminate the banks entirely.
Mm-hmm.
So both parties save a lot of money on fees.
Mm-hmm.
The interest rates are usually better than credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
sometimes higher than a bank might.
Of course.
Depending. It depends. It depends. If it's collateralized, if there's security, if it's unsecured. So let me tell you how it works, the different kinds of things. There's direct lending, which is they put you together with somebody if you have a few dollars that you're saying, okay, I'm willing to invest and I want to make a little return. Because, you know, if you put your money in the bank, you make less than 1%. If you put your money in the stock market, there's no guarantee what you're going to get. And, as any financial advisor will tell anybody, you need to diversify your portfolio. So you need to have a little bit in real estate, a little bit in the banks, a little bit in brokerage, a little bit in bonds, a little bit maybe in the art market, a little bit maybe.
Yeah? All these different places,
well,
huh?
These are options.
How much money
options,
you got?
Options.
Options. Good options.
So you can't put all your eggs. You should never put all your eggs in one basket. So this is another basket.
But what
that
if you bet big?
You have to hedge. Hedging. We talked about what hedging means. Offset with a possibility. If something goes down, the other side will go up. So let's talk about now. Let's just say you have $20,000, and you say, "Okay, I have $20,000," and I advise anybody don't put all of your savings into this program. Somebody asked me recently. I said, if you have money you want to invest, make sure it's money that you can afford to lose.
Exactly.
So if it's money that you're banking on and you need it to pay your tuition bill in 2 years, that's not a good
uh-huh.
source.
It's not okay. Guaranteed return.
So there's direct lending, and this model just puts people one specific borrower with one specific lender, and it's based upon your credit rating and the risk of the capital and the interest the lender is willing to give to the borrower. And
where can you do something like this?
There's all sorts of clubs that are on the internet, and there's different companies that set to do this. So, you know, if your credit rating is high, you're going to get a better rate, and you're going to get more opportunities from lenders
mm-hmm.
than if you, you know, the most important thing is you got to have good credit score. You got to have a good credit score. If you don't have a good credit score, first of all, people with bad credit score got bummed out of the banks. These people are not going to lend to you. These are not subprime loaners, mm-hmm. Lenders. So this is for people who, you know, who maybe only need $10,000 and the bank isn't even going to talk to you.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Then there's indirect lending, and this is pooling. So if you come up with 20, I come up with 20, and I got three other people come up with 20, so we have $100,000, and we pool our money, and we might find 10 or 15 different borrowers
uh-huh.
looking for small loans, $5,000 to $10,000 to $15,000. So we don't have a specific relationship with one uh-huh. borrower, and so this is how most banks operate. By the way, your money is put in. It's not fungible.
So
you don't know directly
who is like the regulating entity that manages all this.
Well,
like, how do I guarantee that I'm going to get my money back from
there's
you?
There's no guarantees.
So if I give this person my money, they run away.
You're sunk. Okay, but
sounds like a bad idea.
I know. It just sounds like a scam.
It's not automatically a bad idea. They have a lot of success. They have a thorough research. You know, they check you out with, you know,
what's your legal
references.
What's your legal standing?
You don't have. I don't think you have much. There's no recourse. I mean, I guess you could go to courts and sue them with get a judgment. However, you know, past performance is a good indication of future.
Oh, of course, but
so
you can't always guarantee.
So if you've got somebody who's got good credit, pays their bills on time, has a proven track record, has a bank account, has a business, and all those things. And those are the things that you do when you do your due diligence.
Of course.
And so then you're taking that risk of loaning this money. And I want to give you, we're going to come back in a minute or two. I'm going to give you some of the facts. You know, my first initial feeling is, man, there's no recourse. But frankly, you know, if you stop paying the bank, the bank has very little recourse in an unsecured loan. And the credit cards, they have very little.
But liens on your
stuff. Well, you could do the same thing. Your legal fees will be quite high, you know,
yeah.
as far as collection.
Yeah, exactly. You're not a bank where you have, like, unlimited funds to sue people.
Well, but these people generally are going to pay you back. But let's take a break, and let's come back and continue talking about this. We'll be right back.
You'll see the concrete beat by Flagway.
Concrete beat on a cellular canvas. I'm on the street. Cellular mandate. This program is sponsored by Tri-State Merchant Services. If you are a business owner, then you are processing credit or debit cards and checks. Providers for these services can be large, faceless companies who take your business for granted. But at Tri-State Merchant Services, your satisfaction is our priority, and we strive to earn your business every day. We offer more than just credit card processing. We provide valuable insight, solutions, and practical tools for streamlining your business. What's more, while we have the manpower of the leading processors, we never lose sight of the fact that every business starts small and that together we can do big things. At Tri-State Merchant Services, we believe in working with local businesses to strengthen our community. A strong community builds a strong economy. Check out our partner referral program and all of our services at tmsmerchant.com.
Okay, we're back. Flash Talks Cash. So we're talking about if you need money, forget the banks.
So should I just like Google this kind of thing?
And absolutely. Let me tell you a couple of the names of the big club. One is called the Lending Club.
Uh-huh.
The Lending Club is one of the leaders in this program, okay. These kind of things. And let me see what else. I have a bunch of names. Hold on. Let's see. Lending Prosper, P-R-O-S-P-E-R, and Kiva. Kiva, we've talked about. Kiva is a little bit more like a micro lending site. Uh-huh. It's a little more charitable and less...
less business oriented.
Less business oriented, yes. So those are the big names. But let's finish talking about. So you're concerned about if the person stops paying. They're all collateralized loans. And it may not be traditional collateral. You may not put up a house, but you may maybe put up something of value. Maybe you have a guitar or something. I don't know.
That's interesting.
And, you know, and if you have loans in the United States, it's common to file a UCC form, which is a form to that you put a lien against a piece of property, mm-hmm. and it gets released once the loan is paid off. Yes, and so that's run by states. So there's unsecured, obviously, and credit cards are unsecured, mm-hmm. lenders all the time. Most people pay their bills. With the default rate, we'll talk about the default rate.
So do you collect directly from this person?
It depends how you set up, structure your loan.
So why would the organization put these people together? They just want people to succeed, or are they taking a piece as well?
Frankly, if you have an unsecured loan, you're going to pay more on interest.
Whoever is putting the two people together, how are they making money?
Well, there must be some sort of a fee for putting that together. Oh, let me tell you what some of them do. They provide services. There's a whole bunch of services. So they provide loan and origination, which is includes matching borrowers to lenders, calculating interest rates, repayment terms, and dispersing the funds. They service the loans, including formalizing the loans by creating written documents, establishing payment schedules, ensuring timely payments, and collecting funds from one party and transferring them to another. And so those are the things that they provide. So it's like a bank, but it's a lot less complicated than a bank operates. Uh-huh. I'm sure banks started like that back in the day. And then they got complicated and complex. So they're all legal problems. The problems is in most countries, especially we'll talk about the United States, soliciting investments from the general public is considered illegal, and crowdsourcing arrangements, which people are asked to contribute money in exchange for potential profits based on the work of others, are considered a security.
Really?
Yes. So the question
arises, investing in a small business is security?
Well, because you're investing to say, I'm going to get some sort of return. That's the security part of it. I'm not going to get a T-shirt. I'm going to get money. I'm going to share in the profits. That's definitely a security. But that's what you buy stock for.
But what I guess it is like an equity investment.
The question arises, especially when peer-to-peer lending company does not just connect lenders and borrowers, but borrows money from users and then lends it out again. This activity is interpreted as a sale of security, and a broker-dealer license and the registration of a person-to-person investment contract is required for the process to be legal. So this is a new emerging kind of industry, and they have to figure out, and I guess they are figuring out, the legal ramifications of being in compliance and how the things that they don't have to be compliant about. Okay, they're not interested or engaging in subprime mortgages. There are some bad boys out there who do it, and so you have to be careful because there's slime in every business and every industry. So one of the main advantages of this person-to-person lending has better rates than traditional bank rates.
Or you just get one in the...
all often below 10%. The advantages for the lenders are higher returns than you would get from your savings account and other investments. It also attracts borrowers who, because of their past credit status or the lack of it, are unqualified for traditional loans. Mm-hmm. So the unfortunate situation these borrowers have, well, is that people try to get as much high interest rate as they can, it's verging on predatory lending. The vast majority of people use it for debt consolidation, to take and pay off credit cards that are being charged mm-hmm. at 18% and 20%, and they try to get. But you know, as a lender, you have to be very cautious. If this person ran this debt up,
if you put that much debt on your credit card in the first place, why would you trust this person to pay you off?
Well, you know, if you started a business and you started out on, and you it's 5 years now and you're doing okay,
I think you'd have to meet the person at that point.
You can.
I think that's the only way I would be like, hey, so right. Why is it? Like, you can put anything on paper, but like. So you have to like see statements and stuff like that to prove history and also good credit standing.
Well, that's what they do.
I'm just saying that's what I would have to do. And it's just like, it seems very time consuming, depending on the return and how much you're putting into this.
Well, you know, I think that people probably go in very small and see, and when they're successful, they keep investing more and more. There's some returns here. Prosper is one of the companies. Mm-hmm. They've released some returns. There's different credit grades. You know, if you have a stellar credit and you're borrowing and your loan to value to debt is low and all this stuff, so they do analysis just like a bank does. Mm-hmm. So if you're a good credit risk, you're going to get a different grade, a grade A, and if you're a higher risky borrower, you're going to get a grade G. So across the grades, I'm talking about now across the grades. The aggregate return in 2007 was 6.44%, and 2008, 2.44%. Remember, the world crashed mm-hmm. that year. 2009, 8.10%, and projections for 2010, I guess they're not, are 9.87. So it's growing in the right direction. I didn't read, when I was doing my research, a lot of complaints about it. Mm-hmm. So I assume that, and remember, it's social funding too. So they use your family and your friends involved with it. So you wouldn't want to embarrass your friends and your family because they're all involved, and it's somehow they get it where, you know, they're using all the social media.
I understand. Traits. So they're linking a lot of other things into this, so that, you know, there is some sort of personal.
That's right. That's exactly
right. Ramifications,
right.
Not only
so you don't want
financial,
to get embarrassed.
Personal.
Correct. You don't want to get embarrassed with your friends.
It's kind of mean, though.
And you know, years ago, you went to your friends and your family. Now we all know. Andrew and I do a lot of accounting and bookkeeping for small businesses, and a lot of businesses borrow money from family and friends. And unfortunately, a lot of those loans don't get paid back because people don't really feel that they have to pay their family back as if they had to pay the bank or a stranger back. So I think
it depends on the person.
Well,
you know?
But there's a lot of businesses that feel, oh, my mother gave me that money, she can wait, and she can wait, and she can wait. So, you know, this is this, you know, and families get tapped out after a while, you know, they just don't have the ability with this economy. A lot of people can't afford to do it. So here's an option for some small businesses to start small, prove it. You know, I guess it's like anything else. If you have a credit history with this company, then you can go back and maybe get double your loan the next time after you pay it back.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's run like a real institution, and it's just a friendlier approach. You don't have to deal with those bankers and
the process that goes through
and,
that
and then, the fees and the rejections. So
makes sense,
and I'm sure it turns around much faster.
Will they finance a house for me?
They don't do mortgages,
okay.
I don't think.
Just wondering.
Not to my knowledge. I didn't read any of that. Okay, so that's the end of Forget the Banks. Now, I got an interesting email this week. It's vacation time, so this is a good topic. An email where this guy says, you know, my wife and I live in Brooklyn, and they rent out their apartment through Airbnb.
Uh-huh.
And they've been doing it for a while, but this year it looks like they're going to make a little bit more money, and they're going to get a 1099, and he's going to have to report it on his tax return. And he was told that he has to report anything above $1,500. So I said, well, no, that's not true. The deal for the IRS is if you rent your house out more than 14 days, you're now in the business of being an innkeeper, a hotel, or, you know, you have to report it. So So I went into the Airbnb site. They don't give you much information as far as the legal and the tax ramifications. But let me just give you an overview. If you are, and it's very, very popular. Everybody's going Airbnb. People are renting rooms and renting apartments through them. It's very simple to go in and out of this agency. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no fees unless you get a renter. And, you know, they really have a great program. It's easy to sign up. They take care of all the advertising because they take care of the website.
The money, yeah.
And it's all around the world. And they, because of a one bad, rotten damage last year, they have now instituted $1 million of insurance to any homeowner in case you get a bad tenant mm-hmm. and they destroy your stuff. There's over 140,000 people now on Airbnb listing their homes. They only pay 3% fee. That's the only fee you pay. Once you get a successful booking, they handle all your payments and they take care of everything online. And what else? They send a professional photographer to at no charge to photograph your apartment. They pay you direct deposit through PayPal or check. And what else? And
so you advertising for Airbnb right now,
no,
or are you trying to tell me something?
I think it's a great agency. I think it's a great deal. And they post your listing, and it stays on until you turn it off. So they have a great, great program running. So the question is, what is then deductible if I rent?
How much?
So here we go. So first of all,
you just do a portion of your mortgage
you
based on the year.
So if the guy rents his house out 30 days for the year, let's just use an example. He has to figure out what his daily rent is. Let's assume he pays rent. His daily rent, let's say he pays $3,000 a month and they're 30 days, so he pays $100 a day for rent. Is that right?
Can you rent out a rental apartment, an Airbnb?
People do it all the time.
That seems kind of sketchy.
But
I think it's kind of...
People do it all the time. Let's just use this example, okay?
Okay. I just think that you should reference your lease on something like that, because you can't usually sublet an apartment.
Okay, well... Legally speaking.
So I'm just saying...
Okay, let's just use that example, because that's the example that I'm using. So he pays $3,000 a month, and it's $100 a day for rent. So he rents it out for... What did I say? 15 days? No, 15, I said more.
1,500.
So I said more than 15 days. So we'll say 20 days.
14 days, you said, was
no, that's the minimum.
Yeah, all right,
over
go ahead.
14 days. So if you rent it out for 20 days, you got $2,000 of rent expense you can offset against your rental income, right?
Mm-hmm.
Besides that, you can deduct the cost, your fee to pay the agency.
Mm-hmm.
You could deduct some supplies because they're going to use up
all that good stuff.
And you're going to get a daily rate. If your average utility is $300 a month, then that's $10 a day for utilities. So you can take $10 a day times the number of days you rent it out. And you take your insurance. If you pay renter's insurance, you could take a portion of your insurance. And you could take a portion of your internet, because now you're using the internet for business. And you could take a portion of your cell phone if you operate through your cell phone and take mm-hmm. the reservations. And you take the anything else, instructions, directions, whatever you got. And so you need to... If you start to really rent this place out, you need to keep some good records. And it will get to write off, because you're going to get that 1099.
Well, wouldn't the Airbnb tell you how many days you rented the place?
I don't know if they tell
I'm
you how many days,
they kind of
or
service.
They are going to give you just the 1099.
Well, they have that kind of information.
I've seen the 1099s.
Well, they definitely have that kind of information.
Okay.
Because if they know how much you paid, they know how much... You know how much you got paid. They know how many days you rented.
Or you could probably figure it out too.
It's not brain
surgery. So therefore, you're now in business, and you have an extra form to file on your tax return, a Schedule E, and you get to deduct anything associated with your apartment in relation to the rental. So be creative, be legal, and you don't have to just plop that full amount on your tax return and pay tax on it. You are legally entitled to offset expenses against your Airbnb. And you may even have a loss. So, you know...
Probably will have a loss.
Well, it depends. If you own the home, you depreciate your home, so it gets a little more complicated.
Yeah, but still, there's a lot of things going into that.
So, good luck. I think it's a great idea. Use the Airbnb to go away and travel this summer. And if you have extra time and you're not going to be using your place, maybe you can rent it out and make some money on it. We're going to say goodbye this week, and we'll be back next week, and we'll have a nice, cool week ahead of us. That's my goal. I'm going to shoot for... cool air.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our programs archived on our website or by searching iTunes for Heritage Radio Network. You can find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website. Thanks for listening.